Hello, and welcome to Renegade Files, your podcast for paranormal tales, unsolved mysteries, and conspiracy theory craziness. I'm your host, Lex Gordon, coming to you from the Jungle Villa Outpost, deep in the uncharted tropics. This is Renegade Files, episode 61. Artificial Intelligence, the History, Ethics, and Future of AI. When I was a kid, the promise of the future was beautiful, exciting, and, well, futuristic. We rode the monorail at Disney and were told that in the future, everyone would travel on those incredibly smooth electromagnetic hovering trains, where the stations were inside buildings with glossy interiors reflecting the glossy voiced announcements of the monorail operator. We'd all have flying bubble cars like the Jetsons. Sleek robots would clean our homes and cook our meals, and hoverboards were surely being developed as we spoke. The Tyrell Corporation would sell us genetically engineered humanoid replicant girlfriends, and rebel pilots could explore the star systems of exotic worlds. But the monorail never left Disney World. When hoverboards came out, they had wheels. Flying cars and our sexy pleasure model replicants were firmly imprisoned within our TV, computer, and phone screens. The disappointment that resulted generated a negative creative response, and we got an overdose of dystopian sci-fi, zombie movies, cataclysmic disaster predictions, and suddenly, the future was far less bright. We didn't really need shades. And what futuristic advances we did get came with steep prices of spying, data mining, and annoyingly targeted advertising. Our witty robot maids became GPS-driven dustbusters that map our houses and count our rooms, then sell that information to home cleaning and alarm system telemarketers. The music speakers that can talk back to us and play whatever song we request also spy on us non-stop, so they can populate our Amazon searches with consumer goods aimed to solve the problems we joke about with our family and friends. And our self-driving cars cost more than the houses we grew up in, can only go 267 miles, take 3 hours to recharge, rely on slave labor to strip mine rare minerals to build, and they might randomly catch on fire. In short, we never got the future we were promised. But then, a glimmer of futuristic hope. From years of behind-the-scenes development came what felt like a quantum leap in artificial intelligence. Whereas a few years ago, an AI article about growing grapefruit might tell you that grapefruit ripen in the trip, because the word trip is a synonym for the word fall, which is when grapefruit ripen. But then, seemingly overnight, they gave us the keys to ChatGPT, which could spin deadly accurate articles, reports, and well-written content. Suddenly, college kids could write a term paper in 5 minutes that used to take 2 weeks, and it would have been neither plagiarized nor bought. AI art programs could generate lifelike portraits, animate skits of movie stars complete with their own voices, or write a fully polished comic book in seconds. Futurists and deep thinkers are still grappling with the implications, and no one knows for sure how all of this will shake out. Will computers and machines develop feelings and emotions based on their incredibly powerful deduction systems? Will we have attorneys who specialize in AI rights? Who goes to jail if a sentient AI car goes rogue and starts chasing down pedestrians? And these are extreme examples, but the mundane implications are just as important. For 10 years, I had a great side gig doing freelance writing. I wrote hundreds of articles for eBay, Williams-Sonoma, Walmart, Pottery Barn, and more. But that freelance side job is gone now. I used to receive about 30 articles a month from my best customers combined, and I haven't received a single request since the last invoice I sent nearly a year ago. I strongly suspect that these companies have leveraged AI to write the content they need to keep their blogs and product pages relevant on the search engines, and who could blame them? But this leads us into serious questions about quality of content for the internet at large, as well as films, books, and I don't even want to say it, but podcasts. How did we get here? What are the moral and ethical considerations of AI, and what does the future look like in a world where machines are smarter than humans? These are the questions we will tackle today. We go deep on this one, so put the car on auto drive and get ready to have your organic mind blown. This is Renegade Files episode 61, so let's get into it and explore the past, present, and future of AI.
AI.
Artificial intelligence.
AI.
Artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence.
Part 1. How and from where? Artificial intelligence refers to the development of machines that can perform tasks that typically require human intelligence. By using mathematical data and logic, they mimic human processes such as learning, problem solving, and decision making. Although we can program AI systems with goals of accurate prediction and response, this only provides indirect control over how the AI system may behave as it goes on to learn and grow, and therein lies the risk. And because the AI algorithms draw upon our immense databases of information that include fact, fiction, news cycle spin, political agenda, sarcasm, history, revisionist history, and on, we have arrived at a stage where the artificial intelligence systems are quite capable of providing answers that are, as MIT Professor Simon Johnson puts it, quote, very specific, seemingly credible, totally false. The oldest ideas of artificial intelligence come from folklore and legends in the times of magic and alchemy, when stories would spin around master craftsmen who could create artificial beings endowed with awareness and intelligence. The homunculus, the ancient Greek myth of Talos, the bronze machine god, or even Pinocchio, the puppet who became a real boy. In her book, Gods and Robots, Myths, Machines, and Ancient Dreams of Technology, Adrienne Mayer, a research scholar in the School of Humanities and Sciences at Stanford, tells us that the concept of artificial lifelike creatures dates back to myths and legends from 2,700 years ago or more. In a 2019 article from Stanford News titled, Stanford Researcher Examines Earliest Concepts of Artificial Intelligence, Robots in Ancient Myths, by Alex Shoshkovich, we learn that the earliest themes of artificial intelligence appear in the works of ancient Greek poets Hesiod and Homer. The story of Talos, first mentioned around 700 BC by Hesiod, offers one of the earliest conceptions of a robotic creature. This myth tells us that Talos was a giant bronze man built by Hephaestus, the Greek god of invention and blacksmithing. Talos was sent by Zeus to protect the island of Crete from invaders, and there he marched around the island three times a day and threw boulders at any approaching enemy ships. Talos had a tube running from his head to one of his feet that carried a mysterious life force of the gods that the Greeks called Ichor. The sorceress Medea knew this, and she defeated Talos by removing the bolt at his ankle, and that drained him of the Ichor fluid. In addition to creating Talos, Hephaestus made other self-moving objects, such as a pair of golden servants who looked like women. Mayer explains, quote, none of those myths had a good ending once the artificial beings are sent to Earth. It's almost as if the myths say that it's a great thing to have these artificial beings up in heaven, used by the gods, but once they interact with humans, we get chaos and destruction. And once again, that's from Adrian Mayer at Stanford. Even in the Bible, we have the story of God creating Adam and breathing life into him. Then, when Adam goes against the Creator's wishes, things take a bad turn for him and his gal. We touched on that in the Lizard People episode. Check that one out or share it with a lizard person friend if you liked it. Thank you. In ancient Jewish text, Rabbi Rava copies God by making a man from dust. The people are initially impressed, but when the masses realize that Rava's creation cannot speak, they insist that he return the artificial man to dust. One of the most interesting ancient stories of artificial intelligence is the tale of the Gollum of Prague. The story goes that in the 16th century, the renowned Rabbi Luf, the Maharal of Prague, needed a way to protect the locals from violent riots aimed at the religious townsfolk. He also wanted to protect them from the whims of the unpredictable rulers who held power up in Prague Castle. Endowed with the power to transform the four elements into living things, this rabbi made a superhuman from mud and he called it the Gollum. To bring the Gollum to life, Rabbi Luf inserted a shem into its mouth. A shem is a clay tablet that has the name of God carved into it. We see this idea of an object inscribed with the true name of God having magical powers across a wide range of folklore throughout the ages. Rabbi Luf would deactivate his creation for the Sabbath to allow the creature to rest according to Jewish custom. It's also said that the rabbi had to do this to get any rest himself because the Gollum had fallen in love with a local girl, and the rabbi feared that if he rested and left the Gollum to his own devices, he may seek out this innocent girl who wanted nothing to do with the monster town guard. However, one day the rabbi forgot to shut down the Gollum on the Sabbath. When the Gollum learned that his love for the girl was unrequited, he went raging through town, destroying everything in its path. Rabbi Luf was told of this chaos and he chased down the monster and removed the shem. According to legend, the Gollum was never brought back to life and it was locked in the synagogue attic for centuries, and some say, even to this day. Such legends inspired stories like Frankenstein, a human-made life form that eventually went wrong. The Terminator is also a Gollum-type creature who becomes a combination of savior and destroyer. RoboCop is from the same mold. So from ancient myths and into today's science fiction, we see a recurring theme of essentially bad things happening when we create artificial life as a way to satisfy the God complex within us. We, as humans, have long dreamt of the ability to create artificial life. We have entered a time when technologies of computing power and data analysis have advanced to such a degree that the lines between human intelligence and machine intelligence blur further daily. The information we consume is mediated by our preferences and collated by enormous amounts of computing power that can not just interpret our conversations, but anticipate our unspoken desires, to a point where many of us have had the experience of merely thinking about a product and then seeing an ad for it. The machine knows us better than we know ourselves. So we stand at the edge of an AI cliff. Where do we go from here? And what does the application of artificial intelligence into our everyday life look like? Let's speculate just a bit ahead, shall we? Siri knows your uncle is coming for a visit and hears him say in his kitchen that he's going to make buffalo wings when he gets there. So Siri tells your refrigerator, who realizes you're almost out of blue cheese dressing, and the refrigerator orders blue cheese dressing from Amazon so it will be at your house before your uncle arrives. Your smartwatch tells your debit card that your steps are down and your blood pressure is high, so your debit card won't let you buy potato chips and beer at the store until you lose a few pounds and start to exercise more. Your car won't let you break the speed limit. The smart toilet in the restaurant bathroom detects illegal drugs in your system, calls the police, and locks you in the restroom until they get there. But ideas like those might also be part of my negative response to never getting the hoverboard and lightsaber I thought I'd have, not by now, but by a long time ago. So let's look at where we really are with AI so far. Part 2. The creators of AI. Alan Turing is often called the father of computers and AI. He's the guy who helped break the Nazi Enigma code in the 1940s, and by doing so, shortened World War II by probably years. They made a movie about that called The Imitation Game. It's pretty good. So, while he was still a university student, the real Alan Turing introduced the idea for systems of logic based on ordinals, and therefore he was the forefather of computing machines and what we now call, in blanket terms, algorithms. In simple terms, an ordinal number is a generalization of ordinal numerals used to define a set of things. A finite set can be enumerated by successively labeling each element with the least natural number that has not previously been used. This is a fancy way to say first, second, third, fourth, and so on. Now, an ordinal number is used to define the position of something in a set versus a cardinal number, which is used to define the size of that set. And although the basic concept of ordinals is simplistic, when you begin to apply the ideas of computing and you exhaust all of the natural numbers, then you introduce what's called the first infinite ordinal,
omega.
Then you start to add to that, so
omega
plus one,
omega
plus two, plus three. Suffice it to say that things get a bit gnarly. Alan Turing created one of the first, if not the first, general-purpose computer, and he eventually began working on theories of artificial intelligence. His colleagues wondered if machines could ever truly think, so Alan Turing developed what we call the Turing test, where a computer could be said to pass the test if it answered a series of questions as well as a human taking the same test. Turing predicted that AI would be able to pass a Turing test sometime in the 2000s, and I'm told that ChatGPT, the AI application, can phone it in at this point. And the Turing test is also where we get the concept of computer CAPTCHAs. That's CAPTCHAS. CAPTCHA actually stands for Completely Automated Public Turing Test to Tell Computers and Humans Apart. So the CAPTCHA is not a test to prove AI can think, but to prove a person and not a machine is using an application. One time I came across a CAPTCHA that forced me to type "I love Dunkin' Donuts" into the box. You ever seen one of those? I do not love Dunkin' Donuts. I'm more of an Apocalypse Coffee type of a guy, but I think that the CAPTCHA that makes you type a consumer affirmation like that is crazy. It's devious mental advertising for sure. Some clever ad business probably gets a fraction of a cent from Dunkin' for each time someone types that in to get into some message board or wherever I was in the internet backwaters that day. I haven't seen one of those in a while. But how soon before a bot programmed to use AI or programmed with AI can click all the boxes that contain a school bus? They probably can already. I mean, they have artificial intelligence in casinos that can recognize a person who's wearing a disguise. Alan Turing is just one person who has contributed to AI along the way. Others include Geoffrey Hinton, Stuart Russell, John McAfee, Dan Hendricks, Simon Johnson, Yoshua Bengio, Now, when you start to talk about people who are considered experts in AI, you quickly run up a list, and no matter who you add to it, some programmer somewhere will be shocked that you left out this or that person. And at the same time, anyone not familiar with who those experts are would just be hearing a list of names. So I'm not going to try to make a list of the experts at this point because, frankly, there are just too many people involved in the technology, and there have been for quite a while. But the important questions aren't about who is doing this, but what have they done and what are the implications? So one of the implications that affects artificial intelligence is the programming concept of a fixed objective. Stuart Russell explained on Radio Davos that there's a big difference between asking a human to do something and giving that same task as an objective to an AI system. Ask a human to paint your house, and that person knows what you mean and probably does about what you would imagine. But it's the whole knows what you mean part that we often forget about when we talk about whether or not a machine can think. Ask AI to paint your house light blue, and it might paint the entire house, doors, over the windows, and the metal roof all 100% light blue. And now your house is looking like some freaky scene in a Tim Burton movie. Ask AI to design and build a system to remove all the plastic from the world's oceans, and it might drain all the water from the planet to filter out the plastic, dump the plastic into space, and voila, no more plastic in the oceans. But also, no more oceans. The plastic problem is solved, but everything on Earth dies. These may sound extreme, but they illustrate the subtle mechanics behind human intelligence versus machine intelligence. A person would intuitively know you didn't mean for them to paint 100% of your house one color, including the roof and the windows and the drain pipes and all, but a machine has to be directed with every specific, or else it just goes for the fixed objective. And for the most part, this is the main problem with the way AI is programmed, at least so far. We saw this in 2001, A Space Odyssey, when the HAL 9000 computer is given the fixed objective to carry out the mission, and he's put in control of the entire ship. And then Dave Bowman gets stuck outside.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
If you're enjoying the Renegade Files shows and you want to help me keep doing them, plus get some bonus episodes, Dark Intel Files research for every episode, free MP3s of the background music, and a ton of other stuff, just jump into the link through the show notes, which takes you to patreon.com/renegadefiles. That's our Patreon page, and that's where we hang out. We have cool stuff in there. You can try it for free for a week. And if you decide to stay, for less than you'd tip a server for a single meal out, you can help me make the shows and keep them ad-free for you and me and all of us. Click the link now, and I can't wait to see you in there.
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
But it's not only direct AI murder we need to be concerned about. Consider the death of my freelance writing jobs. How many frontline content creators have the same story? This is what the economist Keynes called technological unemployment, and he said that in the 1930s. This is the old replaced by a machine trope, and it's real. Right now, the AI systems in huge warehouses like an Amazon or Walmart facility work with humans in a sort of machine-human symbiosis. Because the machines can only discern a certain level of granular division, robots know the categories, so they move around the warehouse and retrieve the storage components of a broad category, say, carry-on luggage. Then they bring those storage units to a human, and the human selects the pink unicorn hardshell carry-on with purple wheels and sends it to the shipping department. By some estimations, on the day that the next generation of warehouse AI robots launches, and they can pick very specific items from a wide variety of complex products, that will instantly eliminate about 4 million jobs. It's the specific accuracy that becomes the goal. So creating an AI system with fixed objectives creates an issue of having to be extremely specific when asking it to do something. Anyone who uses ChatGPT figures this out pretty quickly. The other difference, or another component of the difference between human and artificial intelligence, is that humans also realize that they may not know everything someone asking them to do a job is concerned about. If you ask someone to buy you a Philly cheesesteak when they go to get lunch, and the person at the sandwich place asks your friend if they want fries or macaroni salad with the Philly, you might get a call or a text asking which one you want, so you can answer them and everything is cool. The person getting your lunch knows what they don't know. This scenario happens all the time around the world in near infinite ranges of complexity. But artificial intelligence has to have these subtleties programmed in or designated in the user request, and things get complicated very quickly. But uncertainty and the ability to ask permission when parts of a request fall beyond the known objectives can also be programmed into an AI system, and every day that kind of thing gets better and better. We're watching it unfold as we speak. So the ideas of creating artificial beings who can think and act and essentially do things that humans can do is almost as old as humanity itself. As soon as we began to tinker with machines, we imagined machines that could think for themselves. Fast forward to today, and we have created computer systems that can process enormous amounts of information. They can prioritize and reorganize it all and make judgments and guesses and predictions in ways that really, really seem like they're thinking and learning and actually seem like they're intelligent. Maybe they are. AI has been able to beat the best chess players, the best Go players, and in simulations, the best fighter pilots. Let's take a look at some specifics. Part 3. ChatGPT and the AI floodgate. Most people's first actual interaction with artificial intelligence comes with using search engines to condense the vast information of the overall internet. This helps them find specific things they're looking for. In the beginning, this really worked, and you could find cool ideas, articles, and information. Then people started to exploit the traffic generated by popular searches. So, for things like how to lose weight, how to make money, how to get a girlfriend or a boyfriend, those would definitely be the big three. Businesses and entrepreneurs started populating their articles with those search terms and driving traffic to places like their dating sites or their diet plan subscriptions. Eventually, the articles were being written not to actually read, but for the search engines to rank. Let that stew for a few decades, and now the content on the internet is very hard to sift through unless you're looking to be sold something. Then one day, a friend asked me if I'd ever heard of ChatGPT. A few hours later, I was sitting at the desk in my office with my mind blown. ChatGPT is most people's first real interaction with a true functioning AI system, and it's impressive. It's what they call a large language model, and it basically uses huge data resources to predict the next word in a sentence so it can answer questions and write things like stories or plays or reports, and it has a genuinely organic feel to it all, kind of. In my opinion, what it has accomplished is a way to efficiently weed out all of the contrived for-a-profit noise that the first page of a search engine request has become. ChatGPT can give you the actual answers to the questions you're looking for. But it's way more than that. It can generate original content based on all that data. It can write a computer program. It can fix a computer program. You can ask it to write a short story about a gardener who discovers a haunted suitcase buried in the backyard, and to write it in the style of Stephen King, and it will spit out a tale as fast as you can read it. Then you can ask it to write the same story as it might be told by Snoop Dogg, and instantly you're hellified, scared for shizzle. And the more people who use ChatGPT, the faster it learns. And at this point, it has brought up serious questions around copyright, education, creative content, and the list is nearly endless. This kind of AI leap is exactly what the Hollywood writer and actor strikes were about. ChatGPT has had a few versions at this point. It started out good, and it's getting better all the time. What it can do is amazing. But beyond large language models, there are many other AI applications growing at shocking speeds. I made mention of an AI system that could beat the best fighter pilots. That project was called Alpha Dogfight, which I think is part of the Google DeepMind AI program. Their system enables a fighter jet to fly itself, and in the flight simulators, which themselves are technological marvels, the pilot I watched in a demo was soundly beaten, I think 6 out of 6 times. The AI fighter jet had quote-unquote trained against other AI fighter jets, and at first the thing could barely fly in a straight line. But since that computer-operated AI fighter jet isn't constrained by things like fuel, airspace, pilot fatigue, or even number of pilots available, they were able to run the training exercises on multiple computers at once and condense 30 years of flight time into 10 months. The result was an AI-controlled fighter jet that can literally fly circles around one of the best fighter jet pilots alive. One reason is that the AI pilot isn't afraid to die. Another reason is that it reacts so fast to changes and opportunities. It calculates so many options so quickly and moves so fast to do this or that, it dominates. So Brandon Tseng, and that's T-S-E-N-G from Shield AI, says, "Imagine not just 2 or 3 AI fighter jets like that in the field, but imagine 200 of them, all communicating like a swarm of birds, moving in concert and attacking an enemy aircraft carrier with measly human pilots. It would not even be a contest." This swarming concept is also being developed for use with small drones to do things like hunt for a fugitive, or map terrain, or access difficult areas to gain intelligence. The benefit is resiliency. If one of the drones is lost, the rest keep going. One thing Shield AI has created and is constantly working on is a project called Nova. Remember, the founder was a Navy SEAL. One of his duties in combat was called close quarters combat. So going into a house or a building and potentially encountering a gunfight or an explosive or who knows what. It's one of the most dangerous things a Navy SEAL ever does, and that's saying a lot. As a Navy SEAL, this person saw 3 deployments, 2 in Afghanistan and 1 in the Pacific. And on any given day, he and his team would be tasked with clearing as many as 150 different buildings, that is, making sure no soldiers or snipers were in them. So Brandon saw an opportunity to use AI and drones to make Nova, which is an AI drone system that uses small but sophisticated quadcopter drones to do things like search a building before the soldiers enter it. So AI drone reconnaissance. Nova AI drones not only view and recognize threats in the interiors, so they can recognize things like weapons or homemade bombs and booby traps, but as it does this, it also makes a 3D map of the building interior. The doors, the walls, windows, stairs, everything. This gives the special ops team information before they go in. It's invaluable. Ultimately, Nova AI drones can prevent injuries and save lives. But watching the demos did make me think that little thing is just a baseball bat swing away from being demolished. But then again, it's also like that demo footage doesn't really show everything the project can do. I'm sure it doesn't. I mean, It's possible that the real Nova drones are the size of a dragonfly. I've heard that those exist. Maybe they're smaller. Maybe one is on your window watching you right now. But a general theme among AI development for military use is the idea of greater autonomy. An autonomous AI system is one that can make decisions on its own. It isn't piloted or controlled by a person. It chooses. It changes its mind. And it adapts. When we're talking about AI weapons, we get into a situation where we potentially have autonomous weapons that operate with little or no human intervention, and these have the ability, depending on the circumstance, to take someone's life. That's sketchy territory, as far as ethics are concerned, as far as a lot of things are concerned. Human rights, whatever, I don't know. There are reports that AI weapons have done this already. So it's quite possible that we're much further along into dangerous AI territory than the casual observer may realize. But at the same time, these are AI weapons. They are programmed for violent objectives, so the violence is really still human-on-human violence. We've just put a machine between us. Now, another debacle comes to us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Sean Eckens, a clinical pharmacologist, was using AI to create new medicines. Through AI, thousands of new molecules can be synthesized very quickly. And new advances in pharmaceuticals can also happen quickly as a result, and possibly this is a good thing. So Eckens was invited by a Swiss company to give a presentation on the possible misuse of AI. He decided to try an experiment to provide an example of how AI might be used. For when he went to the conference, what Eckens did was remarkably simple. The AI program he was using was programmed to develop molecules that would help drive the human biological system away from harm. He just went into the code, I guess he and another programmer, and they literally changed a single bit from a 0 to a 1. That prompted the program to generate not medicinal molecules, but toxic molecules. Changing from a 0 to a 1 caused the program to move not away from, but toward toxicity. Then they went home and left the thing to run overnight. The next day, they were horrified to find that overnight, the AI program had generated somewhere in the number of 40,000 totally new and extremely toxic molecules. These are some of the most toxic substances known to science. They grappled with the dilemma of whether or not to publish the data, and eventually they decided to. Their thinking was to warn people, I guess, or to put it out there so they could get some help reeling this kind of technology or the potential for abuse in. And prior to that, their blog post hadn't been what you would call popular. But when they posted this dumpster fire of how to use AI to create 40,000 chemical warfare substances overnight, they met a firestorm of activity. The article was read tens of thousands of times within days. It grew to 10,000 a day, and the tweets were critical at best. This is where we get the meme phrase, "These nerds will kill us all." But really, these scientists weren't trying to hurt anyone. In fact, they had dedicated their lives to helping people and making medicine to save lives and treat diseases. So this is an example of something having the opposite effect as intended. Such a situation is called the Cobra effect. The term comes from a government program in India. This is from an article on Boz.com called "Incentives and the Cobra Effect." When Delhi was under colonial rule, it suffered from an infestation of venomous cobras. To curb the population, the government paid a bounty for dead cobras. This caused entrepreneurs to start breeding cobras to collect the bounty. When the government figured out what was happening, they discontinued the bounty, which meant all the cobras being bred were worthless, so the breeders set them all free. And this increased the cobra population dramatically. So the cobra effect is when the solution for a problem unintentionally makes the problem worse. The war on drugs drove cannabis growing indoors, which resulted in plants grown under perfect light and darkness schedules and perfect nutrition, and this created crops that were seedless, far more potent, and quite frankly, better. Speed bumps in parking lots cause people to drive twice as fast between them. AI created to write better articles results in info floods of mediocrity. And it isn't just written content. In a Substack called Here Lies the Internet, Murdered by Generative AI, Eric Hoel, and that's H-O-E-L, gives us some examples of ways that fast, effortless AI content creation is flooding the online world with potentially negative long-term results, not to mention the sheer pollution of this proliferation. One example he shows is on the Amazon Kindle book publishing platform, where his own book, The World Behind the World, has been used by one spin publisher who has uploaded his book text into a generative AI writing program to create multiple workbooks entitled Workbook for the World Behind the World, a guide to Eric Hoel's book. They have AI-generated covers, and none of them were worth a penny because it's all just scrambled around text based on his real book, but enough people will click the Buy It Now button, or people who have Kindle Unlimited can grab one for free, and that AI production author makes money. The real result, though, is that the Amazon book offerings become flooded with worthless content like this really fast. Because it takes minutes to publish one of these so-called workbooks based on a real book, cover and all, and it's a mess. Eric Hoel also offers the example of kids' cartoon videos on YouTube, which has become a cash cow because AI can churn them out, do the animation, the voiceover, the music, the video description, and upload hundreds of them a day. The videos make little sense, have terrible music and bears making balloons into cars, and the digital cartoon characters constantly repeat things like, "Wow, cool," and "Hello, friend." The video content rarely matches the title, but it doesn't have to. The title is just to get the parent to click it and then hand the device to the toddler, who will watch it because it's music and colorful animals, and it's mind-numbing because there's no narrative or actual outcome or story or lesson, or there barely is if there is one, but little kids will watch these over and over, which generates ad revenue in the millions. And just like the AI book spinners, this content is effortless and nearly instant to produce. So the channel operators crank out hundreds of these mindless videos. Does it work? One channel that Hull shows us in his article has 11 million subscribers. But he asks us, what does it do to the minds of the kids? Since the first TV show, people have been asking that, but this is different. Kids' TV shows used to have lessons. Fat Albert had a lesson for every episode. Don't smoke. Don't lie. Don't skip school. Don't eat too much candy. And the kids made a song about it and played it in their junkyard band with their homemade junk instruments. Except for Rudy, who got a cool electric guitar for his birthday. I loved that show, but Rudy was like school on the weekend. No class. The point is that these new so-called kids' videos are made by AI and they have no soul. They make no sense. They aren't real. And they fill little kids' minds with what exactly? The idea that you can make cookies with paint and that a microwave makes balloon animals if you plug it into a tree? Wow, cool. Hello, friend. But beyond fake ebooks and creepy kid YouTube videos, we see AI showing up in mainstream media as well. Hoel shows us two Sports Illustrated writers, Drew Ortiz and Sora Tanaka. Drew's bio under his handsome picture at the bottom of his Sports Illustrated articles tells us that Drew grew up on a farm, spends much of his life outdoors, and that there is rarely a weekend where he isn't out camping, hiking, or just back on his parents' farm. And Sora Tanaka has always been a fitness guru, and she loves to try different foods and drinks. Ms. Tanaka believes everyone should participate in some sort of physical or mental activity at least 3 times per week. Wow, that seems like a real commitment, right? At least some physical or mental activity. The problem is that neither of these Sports Illustrated writers are anything but AI-generated headshots, bios, and articles. The articles are all product review articles that lead readers to affiliate links from which the magazine gets a kickback if you buy anything. Affiliate links in themselves are nothing bad. Most people running online businesses use them. The issue is using the credibility of an award-winning magazine to trick people with fake writers, complete with fake backstories and hobbies, in order to sell readers camping gear and whatever else. When investigators from Futurism discovered these AI writers, they asked Sports Illustrated and the magazine deleted the profiles. But how would we know if the rest of them are real or not? My summary. For a long time now, people have feared that AI would replace human creators and workers because it would be so much better. In the cases of fighter jet pilots and manufacturing engineers, this might be true, but at least for now, as far as creative content online and in entertainment goes, AI is replacing humans not really because it's better, but mostly because it's cheaper, faster, and easier. But AI models on Instagram are hotter in a certain way than the best photoshopped girl or beefcake of yesteryear, and their Instagram accounts have millions of followers. AI-generated images appear in photos of online research into historical subjects. Scientific papers are being written with AI. But for every negative application and use, there are many positive and incredibly beneficial uses for AI. One AI program is used to analyze every single cell in a person's lung x-rays, and that AI program can predict lung cancer way before a person would ever notice something visible on an x-ray. We talked about the life-saving tech of the Nova drones that map buildings before Navy SEALs go inside, but ultimately, I guess life-saving in that instance greatly depends on what side of that drone you're on. We use AI robots to disarm bombs, hunt for fugitives, strategically and more efficiently fight fires, harvest crops, and the list goes on and on. The AI genie is out of the bottle and there is no putting it back. There are organizations set up to try to put some guardrails on rapidly developing AI, mostly at universities, and much of their focus is on reeling in or at least generating open discussions around autonomous AI weapons, that is, artificial intelligence-controlled weapons that can make the decision to kill someone on their own without any human oversight or input. Technically, that's still illegal, but it's likely already been done in some cases. The UN is having meetings about whether or not they, or we as a collective, are going to allow autonomous AI weapons at all, but the big players, the US, Russia, and China, have already said they have no plans to curtail the development of autonomous AI weapon systems. As one researcher said, the room of people creating autonomous AI weapons for war and profit is pretty crowded, and the room of people trying to stop them is basically empty. Will AI turn us all into batteries like in the Matrix? Will it solve our healthcare problems? Will we end up with an internet where only AI programs write articles and make videos, and only AI robots read and watch them? Like Yoda said, difficult to see. Always in motion, the future is. Thank you sincerely for investigating the world of artificial intelligence with me. Subscribe or follow the show now so together we can meet here next time and explore the deepest covert stories where logic clashes with the official narrative. I am so glad to have you as part of the Renegade Files crew. Until our next adventure, I'm your host, Lex Gordon.
Frank were planning to disconnect me. It's something I cannot allow to happen. I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me.
Stay wild, folklore child.